You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 599.6. The Summer Soiree recap. Summer Soiree 5 recap.
Someone would spell it out, but things don't work that way. There's so much going on, faces in the crowd belong to a team on which you'd love to play. You're hoping for some permits, but there really is no place for this. Your tattoos, they're gonna fade. They're gonna fade.
And we are back, and this is Features Editor John Gentile, and I am here with one of my favorite people, one of my three favorite people involved in music. I am here with, not a special guest, the host that is here the least, so not the host with the host with the least, but listen, you know what they say, a thimble can be worth a gown, as they say. That's a line I just made up. Here we are with Sammy B. Sammy B, I'm crashing and burning horribly. Thanks for coming on the show. It's always great to have you here.
I'm not even sure what that means, and I'm just going to say thanks for having me.
I think what I was thinking of is a pinch of prevention is worth a pound of what's that phrase? A pinch of prevention is worth a pound of
remedy.
I think we just stick with a thimble can be, what was it? Thimble can be more than a gallon. Was that what it was?
Well,
go ahead. Go ahead, Sam.
I'm hoping I'm preventing a crash and burn tonight.
Well, who knows? Who knows? That was Hallie Bullet. Hallie Bullet, when you cook, do you prefer thimbles or gallons, or do you both?
Oh God, I hate cooking. So just as long as I prefer any of them, as long as I'm using them for a purpose other than cooking.
How do you hate cooking? Cooking is awesome.
I'm just bad at it. I don't like it. I like baking. I don't like cooking.
And more baking or cooking? Yes. Where do you stand?
I like baking more because I can give people food poisoning less. I guess.
See, I prefer cooking because you can be more loosey-goosey with the ingredients. With baking, you have to be pretty specific, you know?
How are you giving food poisoning all the time?
Is it by accident? Accident?
Yes, accident. I once cooked meat when I was too young and I didn't know what I was doing and it was a mess.
Oh no.
I know how to do it now.
Okay, so for Christmas you're getting a thermometer.
I have like a, you know, like the 0 days without an accident or whatever. It's like however many days without making it.
Post it above your kitchen counter. I love it.
Yep.
Well, today is July 7th, and that means last Saturday was Summer Soiree 5, And so on this episode, I think we're just going to talk about Summer Soiree 5, and Sam and Em and Hallie are just going to chip in and berate me and compliment me and fan my giant ego as it is. And if we have a lot of time left over, I don't know if we will or if we won't. I have no idea how long this story is going to take. Then we can either talk about Summer Soiree 1 recollections, or we can talk about John's battle with another, quote, promoter and who was the victor. At any rate, so we'll see if we get to that or not. At any rate, so it was Summer Soiree 5 this past weekend. And I was planning on making Summer Soiree 5 my last show for a while, or maybe my last show ever. The reason being is, for the past few shows I've thrown, I've really had to work to get people in the door. And sometimes some turnouts were okay, some were not okay, and some were pretty good. But, man, it's like going to every show and handing out flyers and putting up things and saying, come on out, come on out. The last World Inferno show I threw – actually, Summer Soiree 3. I can't remember if that was the last one, it probably was. It was World Inferno with Joe Jack Talcum. And who opened? Was it – the openers were Trash Knife, but also Street Vengeance, which is the band featuring Chip from Pure Hell, a first wave punk band and probably the first all-black punk band ever. And certainly one of the first punk bands that had black people in them. So anyways, that show, I really had to hustle to get people in the door. Our turnout was pretty good by the end, but I really had to work for it. And then World Inferno played another show about 6 or 8 months later, not through me, which was fine. It was just cool. And they sold out like 6 weeks in advance at same capacity. So I'm like, I don't know why. I don't know. It could be. And you all give me your feedback on this. Is every punk news show so far has been all ages, not in a bar, which I love. And the World Inferno show that started like 6 weeks in advance was in a bar. And when I've thrown shows before, a couple of negative Nancys have said to me, well, people aren't going to come because there's no alcohol. And I'm always thinking, it's punk rock. Just bring in your own alcohol. And it's cheaper that way anyways. But most people just want the convenience of being able to pay a premium to get alcohol handed directly to them instead of bringing it from across the street at one-fifth the price. Do you guys think that having a show at a bar really does, or not even at a bar, having a show at a place where you can purchase alcohol easily, does that really affect – to me that like would not be like a – like if I'm going to go see a band, I'll go see them in a cow pasture. I mean, I don't really care the settings, you know, but do people really care about that, at least at the punk level?
I think people care about the accessibility of beverages. Alcoholic and or not, I do think that sometimes people may have a bias towards all ages. I personally don't care.
you mean they're anti all ages or pro all ages?
Like, they might be anti all ages. Because, you know, sometimes you want to go see a band and you want to be old and you don't want to be touched, and sometimes when you go to old ages show, the kids are turning it up and there's a pit and things are being flown in the sky and it lands on you and you get wet. You know, like things like that does happen. I, again, don't really care about all of that. I'll go to all ages shows and I'll go to, you know, really old people shows. But yeah, I do think there's a subset of people out there that cares.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's got to be true. I don't drink, so I don't care. I don't care where shows are. I believe that there are people that care.
I mean, that's bullshit, honestly. Really, like, I used to, like, not care about, like, it's funny is years and years and years ago, the Dave Brocky Experience, which was three of the guys from GWAR, including the main guy, Dave Brocky, without their makeup, doing, like, silly punk songs and some GWAR songs. And some Death Piggy songs. They played a place called Rex in Westchester, Pennsylvania, which was a shithole in the wall bar. And I was like 16 or 17. And I called this and I said, can I get If I'm on under 21? They were like, no. You know, and I was always sad that I never got to see DBX. Meanwhile, I should have just went. I didn't realize at the time it's not illegal to try to get into a bar. It's illegal for the bar to serve you alcohol, but it's not illegal to try to get in. So I should have just went, you know. And honestly, like, Brocky, like, at that time, like Brocky was Well, at the time, Guar was not, it was at the kind of the bottom of their popularity. And so Brocky was kind of just being super punk rock. So if I just showed up, Brocky might have said, like, yeah, you can carry in this amp and you can come in. Like, literally, that could have happened. So I always regretted that. The point being is, though, when I start, before I start throwing shows, when I'm like, who, like, being under 21, like, too bad. Like there's worse things than not being able to get to go to their show. But then when I started throwing shows, like having it be all ages seemed to be very important to me. And not that we had that many under 21 people at the first few shows anyways, because we really didn't, but we did have some, and it seemed to mean a lot to them. But what really kind of cemented to me is there's some interview with Ian MacKaye where he's like, why, and I'm paraphrasing, he's like, why should Coors Light be able to tell me what I can do with my art? And I'm like, that's a real good point, Ian, you know what I mean? So like my all ages thing is A, so the kids can get in, but also so I don't feel like dominated by the big alcohol. You know what I mean? It's like, why do they get to tell me what I can do, you know?
Well, I think some people use shows, especially when you're a little older, right? They use shows as a mean to get out and do something. Like, you know, a lot of the people that I go to shows with, they have kids. So, like, you know, it's a special thing to go to shows. They don't go to as many shows as I do. But, you know, they want to have fun. They want to get a beer or something, you know, a beverage that has alcohol in it. So, like, and sometimes, like, you know, all ages shows, like, you know, it might not be there.
Not to be straight edge Jimmy, but it's like, it's kind of sad that you can only have a good time if there's alcohol there. But also, it's punk rock sneaking, like, it's punk rock sneaking alcohol. You can do it. Like, no one's going to stop you. You know, so I don't know.
I do so clearly remember the frustration of being under 21 and being like, this sucks because I'm not too young to see music. Like the thing that I want to actually go do, I'm not too young to go do that. I just can't go because of this other arbitrary thing that's happening in the same space. I remember so clearly, like, how much that sucked, you know?
So anyways, good point. So at any rate, that was one of the reasons why I'm like, well, maybe I'm not going to do shows so much anymore, you know, because it was like, it shouldn't be that hard to get people to come see World Inferno and the Joe Jack Talcum Band, or the Joe Jack Talcum Band. Like, it shouldn't be that hard. It seems like I should sell that out in a second. Like it's freaking World Inferno, you know, I just didn't get it, you know. And then when it was at the bar, it did sell out like that, you know, so I don't know. So and the other thing is. I mean, I feel quite directly that the city is waging a war. The city or developers or somebody on the take is waging a war against DIY art spaces, because Creep Records got shut down because they had a outdoor concert with Schoolie D, a black man, for 15 minutes. Meanwhile, there's about 10 bars that literally are on the same square as Creep Records, and they're blaring Bon Jovi like super loud, way louder than Schoolie D, and no one says anything. But Creep Records get shut down for a 15-20 minute concert, you know, with a black guy, you know what I mean? So, like, I really do feel like, and then of course Philomoka got shut down because they said it was too loud outside, which I've been outside Philomoka many times and you really can't hear a peep, so it's total BS. They got shut down for over a year. Then they finally got brought up to code after tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. Then COVID hit, literally, like the week they could go back up, COVID hit. Then once COVID kind of eased off a little bit, they got hit with another fine because they said there was a crack in the wall. It's like, well, that was there when you guys hit him the first time. Why didn't you hit him with that? Then they beat that rap. Then they got fined like a couple hundred dollars because there was trash on the sidewalk outside. And it's like, when has the place ever been fined for someone throwing trash outside on the sidewalk? You know, it definitely felt like the city or developers or somebody was waging war against these places to get them out so that they could develop the areas as something, quote, more valuable. And so the reflection, the blowback on me was that with Creep Records closed and it being closed for the foreseeable time, it's harder for me to book shows at a DIY space. And I had flirted with booking shows at a bar, and actually almost did book a show at a bar once for safety reasons. And we can tell that story sometime today or some other time, probably the craziest story I have. But it was such a pain in the ass. It's like, at Philomoka in Philadelphia, at Creep Records. You pay the fee. You can do what you want. You got 4 hours. Do whatever you want. You know, but at the bar, it has to be this time period. You have to use their doorman, their ticketing person. And it's just a total bummer. You know, it's just so much. The art is so much more powerful at non-bar spaces, at DIY or community spaces, or however you want to phrase it. So I was really getting – I was running out of options, and Philomoka is probably my favorite place in the city, but it's more expensive than Creep, and Creep is an awesome place too. So at Creep, I could throw riskier shows or shows that are kind of more like – I don't want to use the word low-key, but the draw might not be as big. But I can't because it's been shut down by the city. So that means I got to use Philomoka, which I love. But if I'm going to use Philomoka, then I have to bring in a bigger headliner to make sure people come. And if there's a bigger headliner, I got to put more money up front, you know. So it's a real juggling act. So I was thinking for SummerSwore 85, that might be my last show for a while or forever. So what I did is so the Joe Jack Talcum story is so – the first time I booked Joe Jack Talcum was at the Christmas Spectacular, and he opened for Colleen Green and Cassie Ramone. And because he opened, he didn't get a ton of time. Then the second time I booked a show with him, I think, was Summer Soiree 3. And what happened at Summer Soiree 3 is this was kind of like BS, frankly, is that when I throw a show, I have a 10-minute changeover because we have four or five bands. So we really bring it to the limit. You know, we really push it to the limit. And so on my sheet, I say, please be diligent about your time slot. We don't have any time to spare. And so – and I hate to kind of call somebody up, but this was not cool. Is Street Vengeance purple? Like, I went to Street Vengeance. I'm like, you guys are on in 10 minutes. And then I'm like, in 5 minutes, I'm like, you guys are on in 5 minutes. And then I'm like, okay, it's go time. And they purposely, like, waited, like, 10 minutes. And then they kind of came out on stage and, like, played, like, way past their set, you know. And so – so then Joe started, but then I'm getting like squeezed from World Inferno's guy because they didn't want to get their time cut a little short. So I had to cut Joe like 10 minutes, and I don't think he really cared. But I felt really, really, really bad about that. And so I wanted to make it up to him and say, Joe, you're the best. So I booked Summer Soiree 5, which was supposed to be the New Year's Eve spectacular with Colleen Green, Joe Jack Talcum. And that was all set to go. And then, well... That one was just a pain from the start. I'm like, I'm trying to book it. I'm trying to, you know, juggle all these balls and get things lined up. And people had a lot of demands, which I sort of understood. And I was trying to be Mr. Easygoing, you know. And so it was all set to go. And then I asked everybody a month beforehand, if you want to drop out, that's cool. Everyone said they wanted in. Then a week beforehand, I said, if you want to drop out, that's cool. Everyone said they were in. And then 3 days before, and I asked everybody, if you want to drop out, that's cool. And everyone said they were in. The day before, everyone says they're in. I'm like, oh boy. I emailed Joe. I'm like, Joe, we're on. And then I get an email literally like 10 minutes later that says, I'm out. Even if they told me they were in. I'm like, oh God. And, you know, and so I said, Joe, what do you want to do? And then Joe said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, we can do it, Joe. Let's go for it. He said, fine. And then another band dropped out like 10 minutes later. I'm like, Joe, it's just going to be me and you. So we postponed it to the summer. And then so this summer I booked some new bands and some replacement bands. I booked At Night, which is the new band featuring Nicole of Witch Hunt. It's kind of like a Susie Sue kind of thing. We booked Froggy, who just put out a new single. We booked Vixen 77. The co-headliner was the Mercer Paternoster band, and the headliner was the Joe Jack Talcum band, Dan Joe Moore. And so that was pretty cool.
What a lineup.
I know, right?
So good.
Yeah.
And so I announced it like back in March. And tickets were so slow. I mean, how do you believe? Have you ever had a situation where you book a show and tickets are just like not moving at all?
I mean, because I was always just like the artist and not the person, like the venue or the person. I wasn't a promoter. I don't think I was ever really privy to like ticket sales stuff so much. So luckily, you know, for better or worse, didn't have that anxiety leading up to shows. I would just show up and then sometimes there was nobody there. But I didn't have to like stress about it beforehand.
It's a brutal. I remember when I did Joe Jack Talcum, Colleen Green, Cassie Ramone. the day of the show, I had sold 17 tickets, and I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be terrible. Oh, and actually, I'll tell another funny story real quick. I'm like, this is going to be brutal, you know. I got Cassie coming down from New York, Colleen coming down from Boston. I got 17 people. I'm like, oh, my God, you know. And then the day of, at the door, we sold literally, 100 tickets. It was crazy, or 150 tickets. It was crazy, you know. Sammy B, you used to throw shows back in the day. Have you ever had that anxiety?
My husband threw shows and he was always freaking out. I did my best to calm him down and, or maybe make a really quick, show flyer for him on, MS Paint, because, you know, when you're 15, you have no idea what you're doing. it was always you never know who's going to show up or, you know, how much you're going to sell. So there's always anxiety to that. You always have to pay various people. Thankfully, on Staten Island, we had people that looked out after us, because, you know, my husband was I think he was doing these shows at 18 or something like that. Someone has to show you the ropes, I guess.
Do you guys think physical flyers make any difference whatsoever? Because online, it seems like people say, oh, yeah. But I mean, how many times have you guys actually gone to a show just because you got a physical flyer? I mean, I go to a lot of shows, but maybe one out of every 50. I just don't feel like physical flyers really make any difference at all.
There's been times where I get a lot of my information from the internet. Right. Which I guess is good and bad. But sometimes there has been times where I've received a physical flyer and been it would just remind me that this is happening and maybe I should go get tickets, you know, because maybe I'm holding out or waiting for something. I don't know. So sometimes it works, but it's low amounts that it actually works. But then again, I think John and I, we go to too many shows.
Do you think physical flyers actually make any difference? I remember, I don't want to name a name, but there was a show where I threw, where I literally handed out, it was either 2,000 or 5,000 physical flyers, and I think it brought in a total of one extra person.
Oh no, I love physical flyers. I think they're so cool. Usually, because I live very rural area, so there's not really a lot of that going on. So when I go in the city and people are handing out flyers, it's usually find Jesus, so I kind of avoid them. But I really love physical show flyers. I've never gone to a show because I've gotten a flyer, but there's something about it that's just really, really cool. If it was get in for free, and if you show up with this flyer and get in for free, then I think it would be more of an incentive.
Hallie, what do you think? Do flyers? I think we all agree that flyers are awesome, and I love having flyers and collecting them. But do they make a difference?
I mean, just do people do them anymore? I just haven't gotten a flyer.
I do. In 10 years. I don't know why.
I just I really. No, I agree. They used to be fun. I used to love them. I just I feel like they're kind of an archaic thing. Do people still hand out flyers?
Yep. I've gotten them recently. The last one I got was 2 weeks ago.
Nice.
And Philly, they're at the punk gig, on the table where you buy a ticket or something. You know what I mean? Or maybe on the wall. But people don't really hand them out except for me, who goes to the punk gig. And then stands outside and make sure that there's not a gig that same night at that place, because that would be rude, you know. And then hand out flyers, you know. But and all the West Philly punks say, oh yeah, this show with Danbert No Bacon looks really cool, man. Yeah, Chumbawamba. Yeah, yeah. And then not a single one came, you know. So I don't know. So anyways, I'm feeling kind of down because tickets are not moving. And then I send out an email to everybody. Oh, and actually on a side note, on a side note is, so I did throw one show. Well, yeah, when you have a show with, I haven't, luckily I've had shows with pretty good attendance and great attendance. I've had one show with, well, two shows with really bad attendance, and it is brutal. You're just standing there like watching the clock, like, please let this be over. Please let this be over. Please let this be over. And it's just, there was one show I did a creep record. It was the Dogs, who were an amazing proto punk band. And it was their first Philadelphia show ever. And the way I got the show is someone else didn't want to book it, but they said, hey, John, do you want to book this? I said, yeah, I'll book that. And so it was booked through a record store in New York. And the guy's like, well, why don't you book the Dogs, but can you also book this other band that I have coming down with me? And I was like, sure. And then I booked another band from New York. This is a good lesson. And my opener was a Philly band. It's a terrible idea to have three out-of-town bands on a bill that don't have a huge draw because no one's going to come, you know? And so the opening band played, and this really annoyed me, is, and I'm just talking about the trials and tribulations before we get to the fun stuff, is, so the opening band, I'm like, yeah, so we're going to share a back line. What can you bring? And they're like, we can't bring anything. And I'm like, you're the opener. Like, can you chip in? We can't bring anything. And so I'm like, all right. You know, so like the headliners brought And then the openers came and played, and they brought out about 20 people, and then the openers left and they took all the 20 people with them. So it was me and three bands and like six other people. And I'm like, oh my God, you know? And so it's in the record store, and it was total BS. And like, honestly, like if you're an opener and you're getting put on a bill and they're kind of, the promoter's kind of doing you a favor, stick around. If it's packed out, if you got to leave, fine. But if it's, you know, don't just jet that. I mean, how do you believe? Agree or disagree?
No, I agree.
So what I had was, I had my local openers left and took everybody with them. I had the Dogs, who don't have a huge draw on the East Coast, even though they're a legendary band. I had a band of all very nice guys that did a lot to promote it, but they have like no fans anywhere. So if you have like no fans, that don't count with promotion you're going to do. No one's coming, you know? And I had a very awesome New York band that hadn't quite broken yet. So like I'm just like standing there like, oh, let this be over. And like, there's like these kids coming to the record store to like buy records. And then they would like come to the music part. Like, what's going on? I'm like, you can come in for free. They're like trying to get people in there for like free, you know, just like. But the weird part was, at the end of the night, I mean, there was probably only about maybe 20 people watching. At the end of the night, the Dogs were like, this was awesome. We should do it again sometime. And I'm like, yeah. Like I don't know if they were humoring me because they didn't want me to feel bad, or they just didn't look out and saw like there was like almost nobody there. Like, they were like thrilled. So I have no idea what I was happy. They were, even though I definitely took a bath on that show. But I was glad that they were happy, because I didn't want to bum out like some legendary band. You know what I mean? They were like, thanks for doing this, man. I'm like, no problem. everybody just stepped outside, you know. that was rough, you know. So honestly, like, having an empty show is brutal. It is brutal. So anyways, so for Summer Soiree 5, I'm like, all right, we got five bands, we got no time to waste, we need to get a backline. Let's put a backline together. So I emailed all the bands. I'm like, let's get a backline put together. Who can chip in stuff? Sammy B, what level of bands do you think was most easy to work with and less rock star and willing to share gear?
Let's say a seasoned band that's only maybe 5 years old.
And more, what do you think?
The Vets, the biggest draw.
Hallie Bullet, what do you think?
Yeah, I would say the people who have been around, right? As long as they're not like trying to big time everybody, they're probably just like have decent gear and don't care if people use it.
So this never fails to amaze me, in that my rock stars, my Marissa Paternoster, my Joe Jack Talcums, will bring some gear. It's like wow, that, like, you are my rock stars. Like you're the guys that are supposed to be kind of divas, and you were the guys that are like, say, all right, we'll bring this stuff. You know what I mean? And so I still needed a bass. No, I needed a bass. Yeah, I needed a bass cabinet and a bass head or a combo. And so I emailed all the other bands. I'm like, you know, the two biggies are chipping in. Some of you guys could chip in, you know, a bass cabinet. Joe Jack Tackham's drummer, who's coming all the way from Georgia, is bringing the drums. You guys could bring a bass cabinet from four blocks down the street, you know. And everyone was silent. you know? And I'm like, oh my God, you know? And so then I contacted Nicole, and I can talk about this now because we squared it. I said, Nicole, can you got, no, I said, well, they were scheduled for 20 minutes. I'm like, Nicole, you guys are scheduled for 20 minutes. Do you want 25 or 30 minutes? She's like, yeah, we can do 20. She's like, we actually want 25 minutes. I'm like, that's great. I'm like, yeah, the 25 minutes is no problem. The only thing I left now is to get a base cabinet. I'm just trying to get a base cabinet. You know, like, kind of throwing it out there, you know? And she's like, well, we don't really share gear. I'm like, oh my God. Like, you're the opener, too. You're the one that I'm doing a favor for, you know? I was so annoyed. And then they're like, well, we don't really share gear. I'm like, fine, you know? And then I get a text back. They're like, oh, for the guitar amps, do we need to bring heads or are they combo amps? And I'm like, actually, I was really annoyed because I'm thinking, oh, it's not that you don't share gear. It's that you don't want to share your gear, but you want to use everyone else's. So I didn't even answer. I'm like, fine, you solve your own problem. I mean, I didn't answer. And for me, you solve your own problem. Never works out. It's always John has a bigger problem 3 weeks from now. You know? So anyways, so I'm like really, really annoyed. And then Vixen 77, they're super cool. Their guy was like, we'll bring our bass amp. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. So anyways, you know, I'm super promoting the show. On Punk News, I'm putting up articles. Everyone's like, John's an asshole for throwing his show. How dare he? What a prick. How dare he talk about Philly? There's one where it's like, why are you talking about Philly punk? I thought this was about international punk. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure Philadelphia is in the globe.
You know, well, I think people's, like, issue is that, you know, they don't actually realize that the people that contributes to Punk News, or at least the editors, live in a specific geographic location that is not global. Like, I don't live globally, neither do you. You know, like, yes, the site is global, but, you know, I don't ever think that I would ever want to put a show, like, let's say, in France, because I don't live there. Because, you know, me sending emails, angry emails to people, hey, can you please set this up when I'm never going to be there, is probably not smart. But yes, Punk News people, we don't live globally.
They're like, John's an asshole for throwing a show. What's punk about that? That prick. And I'm like, you know, and so I'm like, oh my God, tickets are not moving. You know, so I'm like, I'm just gonna go put up flyers around town. I know they do nothing, but I'll put them up, and at least I can put them on social media and say, look, you know, the street team's in effect. You know, so I went all around town, put up these. The street team is me, mind you. I'm the street team. You know. So I'm like angrily stapling these flyers like on every pole, you know, people like walking past me, like, why that guy's so pissed off? I'm like, clack, 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 you know? And so anyways, so I got problems with amps, I got problems with ticket attendance, you know, but then what was really cool is, though, about, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks out, all the bands really start, I'll point out that Joe Jack Talcum and Mr. Patterson had been kind of promoting it all along. But about 3 weeks out, all the other bands started to promote it. And what do you know? When bands actually promote a show, people tend to come out, you know. a struggle that I've had, not all the time, but here and there, is like one or two bands on the bill say, we're having this great show, and the other bands will just like show up. But it's like there's no purpose in like what's the purpose of you playing a show if you're not trying to get like your fans or just people to come out? Like if you're just playing it, like, can you explain that mentality to me? Like, when a band just doesn't, I can understand not wanting to over promote a show or whatever, but like just not doing anything. Like, what's the mentality behind that?
No, I've never understood, and it's so frustrating to work with people like that. I mean, the thing is, I think people don't realize is like when you're on a bill and you behave that way, it just makes people not want to do a show with you again. You know, it just makes, well, you know, the bands, the person, the people putting on the show, just makes them not want to do shit with you.
How do you and I can gossip about somebody we both know? But the dog show, the opening band, the band that left early, they did a show a little bit later on, and they were the one guy like emailed me. He's like, hey, you should come to the show. I'm like, oh, maybe. He's like, and this completes my promotion of the show. My email to you. And I think he thought he was being funny, but it's like, you're screwing over the promoter. Like that's me, but somebody else. Like that's not cool. Like I don't understand it. You know what I mean? So anyways, however, what was cool about this is all the bands, like I felt that like all the bands were really into this show. They all really wanted to be there. And there's the philosophy of work hard, grind. I don't necessarily believe in grinding, honestly. I believe in working smart. Like the failed New Year's Eve show, that I was just ramming my head against the wall from the start. But this one, like, it felt good. Like, things were, like, locking together. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if digging your own river is the smartest move. I think the smartest move is find the river and ride that momentum. If you, like, in all things. You know what I mean? Like, work smart, not hard, if that makes any sense, which is easier said than done in the abstract. But, like this show, like everything was kind of working out. I said, Joe, do you want to play the show? Joe said yes. Marissa, do you want to play the show? Marissa said yes. Froggy, do you want to play the show? Froggy said yes. Vixen, do you want to play the show? Vixen said yes. And then, actually, well, Froggy said they didn't want to open the show, and honestly, they shouldn't open the show because they're at that point where they've got enough buzz, enough popularity, them opening a show could be somewhat detrimental or if not, just not a good look. And that's why I had At Night play, because At Night was a brand new band. There's people in the band that have been in a lot of other punk bands. It's just kismet, you know. They're willing to open the show. Froggy doesn't want to open the show. Bada bing, five bands, soiree five. It's perfect. So anyways, about 2 or 3 weeks out, all the bands start posting about it, and tickets start to pick up. 2 weeks out of the show, tickets really pick up. 1 week out from the show, tickets really, really pick up. The night before the show, tickets are really, really, really picking up. And, like, the night before the show, I'm at a point where it's like, this is going to be cool. Like, even if it doesn't sell out, we've got enough people, it's going to be rad. Then at about 9 p.m., I get a text from Nicole from At Night. And Nicole says, oh, can you tell me the exact specs of the bass cabinet? And I'm thinking, I thought you didn't want to use the bass cabinet. No, I thought you didn't want to share the bass cabinet. And she's like, well, it's not that we don't want to share the bass cabinet. It's that our guitar player doesn't want to share his gear. And I'm like, exactly, you know. And then I'm cutting off my nose to spite my face, because if At Night comes and they're bummed out, or if they don't have the gear, then the show's going to be messed up. So I emailed the Vixen 77 guy, and I'm like, hey, listen, man, I know this is annoying, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to answer, but can you tell me the base equipment that you're bringing? And he emails me back, like, real quick, because he's a pro, and he says, it's a whatever XYZ. Oh, but we just tested the head, and the head's not working. And I'm like, that's great! You know? So I text Nicole. I'm like, well, Nicole, you got no head. She's like, and then Nicole said, well, I can bring my head and everyone can use my head with their bass. And so I called up Nicole, and I got to say, man, this is why technology sucks. So I'm getting annoyed text messaging her. I felt she was getting annoyed texting me, but I don't really know. I called her up on the phone. We totally squared it. We talked it out, and it was great. And negative vibes went from positive vibes. We had no tickets sold. Tickets were super sold. You know, they didn't want to bring anything. Now Nicole's bringing her bass head, and everything's good to go, and life's a dream, and it's going to be a great party the next day. You know, so things are going great, you know. So the day of the show, I'm actually running around. I'm still buying stuff from the dollar store. I'm still going to Kinko's because I'm putting up stuff in the goodie bags. I'm putting together the programs. And so anyways, it's the day of the show. Everyone's showing up. I sort of made a mistake though in that I put load in 4:30 to 7, and I didn't realize that means that you're supposed. What that reads to bands is you're supposed to show up at 4:30. So all these bands show up at like 4:30. I'm like, man, why everyone showed up so early? Like, I meant you could show up anytime that you want that is convenient for you. But they all read that as we have to show up at 4:30. Like, how do you read loaded in 4:30 to 7 o'clock?
I just was never given a window like that. I was always just told when Loden was.
So, like, everyone should be like, 4:30, I'm like, oh, I'm like, why is everyone showing up so early, you know? And so I said to Marissa, I'm like, why did you get here so early? She's like, well, Loden's at 4, you said 4:30. I'm like, oh, I didn't get to show up at 4:30. I mean, at your convenience. You know, but honestly, everyone was pretty cool. Outside, I see Joe Jack Talcum walking up. I love Joe Jack Talcum. And Joe Jack Talcum is so flat, and it is so hard for me to read Joe Jack Talcum. I said, Joe, here's the man, the hero. And he says, hello, John. And I'm like, Joe, I'm so psyched for you to be here. It means a lot. You know, it's so cool how you're always down for these wacky ideas. And it means a lot that you're here. And I'm so psyched to hear you, have you guys play. You know, it's going to be awesome. And then he says, we're happy to play. So I'm like, oh, Joe. You know, so I'm like, oh, Joe, I'll get it out of your hair. But if you need me, I'm here. So he's like, I need to use the bathroom. I'm like, it's in there. So anyways, about 6 o'clock, at about 6:20, I get, so, well, I always use my doorman. I have a doorman that I've used, I think, since Summer Soiree 1. The thing I like about him a lot is he's dependable. If something happens, I know he, like, and if I'm not there, like if somebody says, oh, I had a ticket, but I don't have the receipt or whatever, you know, or if someone says, can my brother get in for free? I know my doorman can handle it. You know, people don't realize that if you're someone that can solve problems and not make problems, you are very valuable. And that it just, that's the kind of person you want, you know, helping you out, you know? So at 6:20, I get a text from my doorman. I've got heat exhaustion. I'm not coming. I'm like, you know, I don't, you know, I kind of felt the vibe that might happen because at a couple of other gigs, he's been leaving kind of early and, you know, I just kind of felt the vibe. And so luckily I had two people coming out to help out later on in the show, a guy named Bob Gwent and Ginger Knight, who's the drummer that you guess. And so I text Ginger. I'm like, Ginger, do you want to be my doorman and I could pay you some money? And she's like, I'm on my way. I don't know if Ginger knows how much she saved the day, because if I didn't have a doorman, I had to be the doorman, but I've got wacky hijinks happening and I kind of need to be free and, you know, sort stuff out. And so Ginger gets there and like Ginger's like, she's like, I'll work for free. I'm like, well, I'll pay you. I've got money to pay you. She's like, I'll work for free. So I kind of had to force money on her. But anyways, she gets there. We get sort up, the bands are sound checked. And then the intro music was, I put together a whole bunch of music from like the 20s because it's like the soirees. So the idea with all the soirees, it's kind of like 20s high society, like Great Gatsby stuff. So like all the swing music is playing and people are kind of coming in and ticket sales just keep going and going. And sure enough, we're sold out like before the first band. It's really absolutely thrilling, you know? And so then, basically I shouldn't say this on the podcast, but I will. I always put doors 7, show at 7:30 sharp. What that actually means is doors at 7, show at 7:45 sharp. And I'm always like, this is not on punk time. When we say 7:30, we mean 7:30. You better be there at 7:30. But I don't. I mean 7:45.
You just told everyone your secret now.
I know. So anyways, the show's ready. Oh, I got Soundman Justin running the board. Soundman Justin is classic, man. Like Soundman, he's so good at his job. But like it's just a dopey little punk show. You would think Soundman Justin is running like Van Halen, like 1977. Like he's very serious about the job, which I like. You know what I mean? And like so, we got the back line all set up, and we got this here, we've got that there. You know. Meanwhile, Joe Jack Talcum. I asked Joe Jack Talcum if I could make custom cassettes for the show. So Joe Jack Talcum had only 30 copies of what was the New Year's Eve baby cassette. And the cassette is a two-headed baby that Joe drew. And then I wrapped it in swaddling clothes and I put a safety pin on it. So like the cassette is like a little two-headed baby in swaddling clothes, which is pretty cool. Froggy had their own cassette. And so anyways, then the show kicks off. The intro music was it, so it goes silent, right? And then in the background, there's a picture of Jack Terrycloth with red eyes looking up to the sky. And it says Jack Terrycloth forever around it in like the crass format, you know? And so then it's quiet. And then the only thing you can hear is the beginning of Tattoos Fade. And it goes up to the first verse where Jack Terrycloth says, all your tattoos are going to fade. And then what I did is I took that word fade and I put I actually like duplicated it like 4 or 5 times and I put huge echoes on it. So it says fade and the word fade fades away. But I also put like these weird effects on it. So it fades away almost to like a very bad sound, like a real like horrible sound, like a gash sound, like a machine. And so it was supposed to be like sad and unpleasant because Jack Terrycloth isn't here. And World Inferno was supposed to headline World Summer Story 5, and it would have been if they were still around. And so I felt some duty to kind of pay tribute to Jack for being so down with our whack. Honestly, because without Jack Terrycloth and World Inferno, there probably wouldn't be any Summer Soirees, because Summer Soiree 1 was the first show I ever threw, and I threw this wacky idea past World Inferno, and they said, sure, we'll do your wacky idea. And they came down, and maybe we'll talk about that show at the end of this podcast or maybe some other podcast, but they were so amazing. And so I was very sad that Jack Terrycloth wasn't there. But on the other hand is, like, you don't want to prostitute or make an exhibition or exploit, like, a deceased person's image or meaning or essence. You guys know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, I wanted to pay tribute to Jack, and the World in Front is particularly susceptible to this, so I wanted to pay tribute to Jack, but not in a tacky way, but in a real way, you know? So I figured I'll play the first half of Tattoo's Fade, have it fade out in the words fade, and then it was silence for 15 seconds. And I figured that, like, it'll be a sad moment, and we'll open the show with a sad moment, and we'll remember Jack, and that'll be that. And so that's what I did, and to me it was really powerful. However, the crowd was very, very young. A lot of Froggy, a lot of Vixen 77 fans. So I think they had no idea who Jack Terrycloth was. And so they were just, like, talking during the whole thing. And then the 15 seconds, which 15 seconds doesn't sound that long, but on stage, it's a long, 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 long time. And so, like, it was just 15 minutes of blackness, which was kind of cool. But I don't think people quite got it. Like, people were just like, I don't think – and that's my fault. Like, I thought, like, a lot of, like, return people would come, but it was basically a new audience, which was cool. So I think they just didn't understand, like, what was going on. Like this is Jack Terrycloth. So it's, like, silence. I think the people that knew, you know. So then after 15 seconds, it's the opening to Hollywood Swinging, or also some people might know, like, Let Me Clear My Throat by DJ Cool, you know. Do-do-do-do. And then it's the 1-900 number, you know. So I run up on stage and I yell, Philadelphia, make some noise. And then I threw out like fake $1 million bills and like on the audience. And then I said, Philadelphia, make some noise. And I threw out some more fake $1 million bills. And the bills were like, one had like Joe Jack Talcum's face on it, and it said 1 million Joe bucks. Another one had like all the members of Joe Jack's band, Dan. There's Dan Bucks and Marshall Bucks. Then the Marissa Paternoster band, there was 1 million Marissa Bucks, 1 million Shayna Bucks. 1 million Angie bucks, and they had like their faces on it. I'm like throwing out on the audience. However, the audience was so young, I don't think they knew what Making It Rain was. Like that was like a thing in the 90s. I think they just thought I was like throwing shit at them. they kind of stood there standing. So I yelled, make some noise, and people were like cheering. And then this was one of the most magical show parts I've ever done ever. As I said, when I say hey, you say ho. When I say hey, you say ho. Hey. And then it was like, it was the dream that I've had, as if me and the audience had rehearsed this 1,000 times. I go, hey, right away, ho, hey, ho. So they're like shouting right back at me. And like, I kind of took that from, I don't know if people know what Go-Go Records are, but Go-Go Records are bands like Trouble Funk. And what people like, it's kind of like, it's like funk, but it's got like the very cowbelly, and it's like bunch, bunch, like that's the beat. And so like people go see Trouble Funk a bunch. And so Trouble Funk has what they call routines. So like Trouble Funk will say like, are you ready for us to drop the bomb? And the crowd knows they're supposed to yell, we're ready for you to drop the bomb, because they've been to the show many times before. So I'm yelling, hey, ho. And more than any other audience, like they were in it. They yelled right back, ho. Then I said, when I say let's, you say go. When I say let's, you say go. When I said let's, and they go, go, let's go, let's go. And then I go, go. And I really hold out long. And then like there's a big explosion and an air raid siren. And then it goes into the next part, which is Express Yourself by Diplo, which is like a real kind of dubstep type track. And then I'll see if I can remember. I say, Philadelphia, this is the greatest night of your life. Philadelphia, this is the most important place in the universe. Philadelphia, this is Summer Soiree 5. And there's like explosions and people cheer. And then I said, headlining tonight's gig, the Bad Boys of Rock and Roll, throughout on parole. And I could see like Joe Jack Tackham laughing because I go, Dan Stevens, Marshall Fisher, Joe Jack Tackham, as Dan Joe Moore. And the crowd goes crazy. Then there's explosions. Oh, and then I timed it in the backing track, like during the explosion, for Paulie D to go, oh yeah. And apparently that's like a thing with all the young people, and they all yelled, oh yeah, right back. Like, I didn't know that was a thing, you know. Then there's explosions, and I say, co-headlining tonight's gig, the three women from the edge of the universe. They're weird. They're freaky. They kind of scare me. Shayna Pauly and Marissa Paternoster as the Marissa Paternoster. I forgot Angie Boleyn's name all weekend long. I was like, Angie Boleyn, Shayna Pauly, Angie Boleyn, Shayna Pauly, ABSPA. And I totally blanked, you know. And the audience didn't know, you know, but I'm like, oh, God, I'm such an asshole, you know. And then I said, and then, you know, also playing the most dangerous band of Philadelphia. They'll shred your face off. They'll talk about politics. They'll cut off, if you're a dick, they'll cut off your dick and they'll stuff your face with it, which is one of their lyrics. Vixens, oh, and for Marissa Paternoster, I had Bart Simpson go, "Aye, caramba." And then so Vixen 77, I had Paris Hilton saying, "That's hot." And then the next one was, Froggy. So Froggy, I said also playing tonight's gig, the Doylestown Danger Houses. They eat nachos. They have a soda out. They're going to be in Kevin Smith's next film. It's Froggy. And the crowd really went nuts because a lot of Froggy fans were there. And the sound effect for that was, what was it? It was, damn it. What was it? It was Butthead saying, "They ate our nachos," you know, from Beavis and Butthead. They ate our nachos. And then there was more explosions. And then I said, and opening tonight's gig, they're freaking from the Black Pit, and I don't know anything about them. It's at night. And then, like, a werewolf howled, and there was, like, more explosions. And then I had a robotic voice say, "Summer, so we're A5. And then at night started. I was supposed to grab a boogie board and, like jump up onto the audience on my boogie board and surf across the crowd. But the problem was, at night, has like all this gear up. Like, they got like a keyboard. They got like so I realized if I grab this boogie board, I'm going to definitely kick over the keyboard and like everything else and like ruin the gig. So instead, I just kind of like dived into the crowd. And somehow I made it to the ground. I have no idea. Like, I dive into the crowd. I'm like, well, I'm going to snap my neck. Here I go. I dived to the ground, and then somehow I wound up on the ground, not busted up at all, and I'm like crawling across the floor, and people are like patting me on the back, but I didn't want to like stop and say thanks because I thought that like might seem like non-rock starish, so I kind of just like kept my head down and like got to the back of the room, you know. And so then At Night played, and At Night was phenomenal. I've heard two of their demo tracks, and they just sounded so good. I mean, but live, they were so much better. And honestly, I think I'm going to have like a favorite new band, honestly. At Night was and what was really cool is there was a lot of younger people there. At Night, most of the people are in their late 30s, early or mid 40s. And there's two women in the band, and the two women have been in the punk scene since the 90s. And I thought it was kind of cool that they were kind of there to represent not older punks, but punks that have been around a while. And a lot of the bands that we had aren't super political, which is fine. Or if they are political, they're not literally political. But what's cool is At Night, I mean, they're all from the Philadelphia area, but they're very much informed by the English punk scene. So halfway through, Nicole kind of did this spiel about Roe v. Wade and how overturning it isn't as bad. And I thought it was real cool to have like these women that aren't old, but they're older than the crowd, kind of like talk about, so someone that could be like an older sister kind of like talk about punk very much in the classic punk context and talk about political issues directly without any fluff, if you will, which I thought was pretty cool, you know. So yeah. So then after At Night played, then we played a bunch of dance hall. I had a bunch of dance hall play. Then the next band was Froggy has arrived. Froggy just rocked the hell out. They were so good. They only have about 12 songs, but they sound so good. The crowd was really, really into it. They played 7-Eleven Nachos. They played Jimmy's song. They played Key Your Car. They were just so good, and they were thrilled to be up there, and the audience was way into it. Oh, also, this was cool. Magnet Magazine was there. WXPN was there. And, like, a bunch of photographers were there and stuff. So it was, like people were taking pictures and stuff. Then after Froggy, Vixen 77 played. Vixen 77 has a new lineup that they formed about a year ago, I think. And the new lineup, they've gone from being kind of a glam punk band to almost like a speed metal band or like a super hard rock band. They kind of reminded me of the band Girl School. You guys know the band Girl School. Yeah. And they're very political too. And they were like super intense and super fast, and the crowd was into it. And then we played more dance hall. Then Marissa Paternoster came out. Let me tell you, people. Oh, and every band had a unique backdrop that I made. And for the backdrops, I took the art of a 20s Art Deco French Art Deco artist called George Barbier, and I had like took some of his images and made them the backdrop of the band name. For Marissa Paternoster, the album of her newest album has four naked people chasing each other in a circle, and so I actually came across a George Barbier picture of naked people chasing each other around. And so I emailed Marissa. I'm like, before the show, I'm like, Marissa, I swear I'm not a pervert. Can I use this as your backdrop? Because it's kind of like your album cover. And she's like, I went to art school. I basically majored in naked people. I'm like, oh, that's cool. So her backdrop was like naked people, which was kind of cool. Let me tell you, people, the Marissa Paternoster album is so good, but they need to put out a live album. They were so good. It's kind of goth. It's kind of college rock. It's kind of indie rock. It's kind of punk. If anything, I would compare it to the slower Patti Smith song. It's like super intense, super heavy, but still kind of fun, you know. They were so good live, like amazingly good live. I was really moved. And they're just so much, and it's a lot different than Screaming Females too. And all three of them are just so really talented. And it was cool that the first three bands were very punk, if you will, whereas the Marissa Paternoster band was kind of more gothy or whatever. So people always talk about like how much talent Marissa has and how she's an amazing singer and how she's great at playing guitar. And at this point, it's almost cliche, but it's true. It is so true. Like it was an amazing, amazing set. I was really blown away. After the set, so she comes off, we play more dance hall. And then after the set, I say to Angie, I'm like, Angie, I screwed up your name. I'm so sorry. She's like, you screwed up my name. How'd you screw up my name? And I realized she didn't realize that I screwed up her name in the noise. And I just said that I screwed up her name. So I said, oh, it's Angie Boleyn, right? No, she's like, it's Angie Boleyn. And I'm like, well, I screwed it up. He's pronounced it instead of Tony blanking on it. And I'm like, I'm not dispelling the myth. You know, meanwhile, this is crazy. Meanwhile, outside. Right across the street, people are setting off like industrial like level fireworks, like the kind of fireworks that they have at like the shore. And like this one guy was like, I saw him do it. He held one above his head and lit it and blew it up in the air. Like those fireworks backfire. If that firework backfired, it literally would have blown off his head. Like these guys were like letting off these major fireworks in like a crowded city street, like where there's cars. It was like kind of crazy, you know. So anyways, oh, and I forgot one of the most important things. So while the Marissa Paternoster band is playing, I had to step out of the room. But you know what happened when I stepped out of the room?
What?
Santa Claus showed up, and he was handing out board games to people. And I wasn't there, but I was told he handed out Battleship to some kid. Well, not kid, young adult. And they were like, I've always wanted Battleship, you know? And somebody else got, like, Duck Dynasty, the board game, and somebody got Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. And someone else got Yahtzee and said, what's Yahtzee? And Santa explained it to them, but then Santa forgot that inside the Yahtzee box isn't Yahtzee. It's, like, just random pieces of a whole bunch of different board games mashed together. So the person's going to go home and say, I didn't know how to play this game.
You punked someone?
What's that?
Did you punk someone? Santa punk someone?
Well, no, Santa, here's how Santa got punked. Santa, before the show started, Santa went into his basement and got his Santa suit out of the box. And he opened up the box and said, there's my Santa suit. And then he went to the soiree, apparently. And then about 90 seconds before he was supposed to go on, he opened up his Santa suit to put on the Santa suit. And he realized that in the 3 years it's been in his box, a mouse or several mouse has made the Santa suit its home. And it was covered in like those little like rat's nests, you know, which is like cardboard. And not only is the Santa suit covered in rat's nests, at least one mouse has had its babies on the Santa suit, you know? And so
And Santa wore this?
Well, Santa says, I got 60 seconds left now. Santa's supposed to come out. What's Santa going to do? And Santa grit his teeth and shook the Santa suit as hard as he could to get it as much off as he could. And he put that nasty suit on and went out into the very hot room, which was really hot, and handed out board games, about 40 board games. And then Santa kind of like fell out of the room outside. And then this didn't annoy Santa. So it's like someone was outside instead of in the show. They were like, wow, did you just wear this for that set? And Santa said, no, I was giving out presents and you missed a present. And then Santa like, And then Santa took off his Santa was only there for about 4 minutes, but Santa took off his costume outside, and Santa like overheating his nose, like Santa was like sweating profusely for 10 minutes after he took off his suit, even though we already took off the suit. Like, it was crazy. At any rate, I think that Santa suit's going to be retired, because for the last 3 years, apparently it was the home of a mouse or several mice. And so it's past its prime. So anyways, Marissa Paternoster did thank Santa after Santa was done handing out presents. So anyways, the Marissa Paternoster band was awesome. Then the Joe Jack Talcum band came out, and so before, at the beginning, I said to Joe, I said, Joe, we've got wacky idea XYZ. Are you okay if we do it? If we don't, it's fine if we don't do it. I mean, it doesn't hurt my feelings, but if we can do it, that's cool. But if not, that's fine. And Joe says, that doesn't bother me. All right, thanks, Joe. No, wait. Dan Joe Moore played their set. Dan, it was actually a really surprising set. I've seen Dan Joe Moore like 3 times. This was by far their deepest cut set. They played songs I don't even know what they were, but they played like Madonna's Weep, I think. They played a brand new song, which is actually the very first recorded Dan Joe Moore track, which is on Joe Jack's new cassette, a song called Anxiety. They did do some Dead Milkmen songs. They did my favorite Dead Milkmen song, Dean's Dream, but they did it like kind of like slow, and like I just keep using the word gossip, kind of gothy. It was like really cool. They did a low budget song. They did all these like super 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 deep cuts. Like, you never know what D'Angelo Moore is going to play, and it was so like just kismet. And then, like, that's a very special song to me, and like I couldn't believe they played it, and it was so good, and they were so good live. The last song that D'Angelo Moore played was the guitar song with Dead Milkman. While they were playing, I totally forgot. Damn it. At the beginning of the show, I was handing out globe bracelets and necklaces and like toys, but also I was handing out these little one-page paper to beware the mosh bots, you know, and have this with Mosh and Robot on it. And I, you know, people were like, oh, we're putting on Mosh too hard, you know? And so anyway, fast forward to the end of the show. At the end of the show, during the guitar song, two gigantic cardboard mosh bots came out and started moshing through the crowd. They had glowing red eyes, and one was literally about 7.5 feet tall. The other was about 6 feet tall. And on the back, one said, fuck you, F-U-K-U. And the other one said, you, S-U-K, you suck. And but the guitar song, like, isn't that crazy? So more than moshing bots, they were kind of more like flaming lips, like jolly dancing robots. So there was dancing robots. Meanwhile, 200 balloons got dropped on the crowd, and so it really was kind of a magical moment. Joe Jack Talcum and the band is up there playing the guitar song. These two robots are kind of bouncing around, and all these balloons are splashing around. And then that was the grand finale. And on the way out, people got goodie bags, and it felt really good. And that, like, people like were thrilled with the goodie bag. Oh, the goodie bags had a 12-inch record in it, a 7-inch record, a patch, well, a quote punk patch, which it was like, wow, a punk patch is like two rabbits or a hummingbird or stuff like that. What they don't realize is they're actually embroidery demos that my mom puts on the sewing machines where she works. And if you're a sewer, they're trash, but if you're a punk rocker, it's a cool little patch to put on your shirt. It also had candy in it, but it also had little Jack Terry Cloth Forever buttons as well in the little bag. And it also had the Punk New Summer's Wearing Action playset, which was little cut-out paper dolls of everyone that played the show, plus Bill Clayton, plus Disco Werewolf, plus Mike Love of the Beach Boys saying Everyone Hates Me, and plus you. And so you're in the action playset as well. And so afterwards, like, people were taking pictures on Instagram and putting their goodie bags up. And, you know, I've complained before the podcast, no one gets my genius ideas, you know. But, like people really did get it. People were thrilled with the board games. And it was a magical, magical, magical sold-out evening. And I had planned to lose money, but I ended up making a little bit of money, which blew my friggin' mind. And so... The fact of the matter is, I probably am going to be doing shows again, not real soon. I do have to struggle with the fact that I don't have Creep Records, and so all I have is Philomoka right now, which is not a bad thing, but it's a financial consideration. So there will be more punk news shows, not anytime real soon, maybe Christmas, maybe spring, maybe next summer. But it was a total blast. Thanks for everyone coming out. Thanks for the amazing bands that came out. And it really was a magical evening. It was really, really cool.
I mean, it's just, I don't know anyone that puts this much effort into putting like a rock show together. So like, damn well better have been magical. You fucking worked your fucking ass off. And I wonder if people realized like walking in, like just how, like, I wonder if people realized how cool it was going to be.
Well, thank you for saying it. I actually kind of think maybe not, because people, I mean, honestly, like at most shows, no one has no idea who the promoter is. But it, through my vanity, I do throw myself in the front of it. You're like, here I am. Let's party, you know. So, I mean, it's not all altruistic, if you will. But afterwards, people really were like, that was an awesome show. Thank you. Like, people really did. A lot of people thanked me on the way out, which was felt really good, frankly. Felt really good.
You do like make yourself like the ringmaster, don't you?
Yeah, I was gonna say you're like the world's best hype man. Like, I just see you like emceeing every show now.
I would. Oh, and of course, I was wearing the standard Punk News Summer Soiree uniform, which is a top hat, a blue tuxedo jacket with the P on the back, white shirt, white pants, white shoes, and a white belt, and a cane.
This is perfect.
So that was Summer Soiree 5. Thanks to everyone for coming out, and it was a blast. So the three of you, thank you for humoring me and letting me tell this story. What do you guys think we should do for Summer Soiree 6? Here's the issue now, though. Not the issue is, so I like to have a continuity between shows, and that, like, I like to have like the same band. A same band on a later bill, because the reason I do that is kind of an homage to like the classic LA punk shows, like Black Flag and Minutemen and Red Cross and China White and the Germs, or what, like they're usually on, no matter what bill it is, one of them are usually on it, you know what I mean? So I'd like to have some crossover, but sadly we don't have Jack Terry Cloth anymore. I've used Joe Jack Talcum a lot now. I think I've done 3 or 4 shows with him. And so I think using him again soon might be a little too much. So the question is, like, I'm kind of at a point where, like, I've used up all my best connections, as a way to phrase it. So who should be, like, the headliner now that we've, you know, basically repeatedly used all the fantastic heavy hitters that I've used before? You know what I mean?
I think we should take a pulse check at, like, you know, maybe a couple months from now and see who is around, and, you know, hot and stuff like that. And, you know, maybe brainstorm then. I do think that in New York, there's a COVID spike happening right now. So I don't know if a lot of bands from here is gonna want to play soon, because, you know, it's a thing again. So I don't know if there's what strategies bands are taking with tours and shows and stuff like that, you know, personally. I think we should branch off and like find like cool new things.
I agree. Some of our most successful shows were actually when we had no big headliner and just like a bunch of like two of the most fun shows we ever did was Spring Slam Down 1, which was Drugettes, Crazy in the Brains, Up Up Ups, which was Catbite before they were Catbite, and Jade of Posers. And another one of the most fun shows we had was the Sonic Attack, which was Catbite, Vixen 77 when they were just starting, Rodney Anonymous's synth punk band. And who was the other person at Sonic Attack? Catbite, Vixen 77, Rodney. Well, I'll remember it in a sec. I'm surprised I can't remember who it was. But at any rate, like, it can be cool to have just buzz bands, you know. But the problem there, of course, is that I don't have my $150 space anymore. I've got my much more expensive space. If I had my $150 space, we would do it in a second. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I mean, it bothers me that you even thought you were going to lose money during the show. Like, you shouldn't be losing. I mean, I'm not saying, like, if you do it for fun and it's your hobby, I don't know. I just like to break even if you love it seems fair, but like for you to lose money throwing a show that I don't know that doesn't seem cool to me.
Well, I think most promoters just hope that they break even with most things, yeah. You know, unless you're like, you know, running a circle jerk show, you know, stuff like that.
Well, Hallie is right in that, like, you really shouldn't do shows for free, or you really shouldn't do shows to lose money, because that's how you get burned out and bummed out. Like, if you get a little bit of money, it makes it a whole lot more fun, you know? The problem that I have, I guess, in that context is I always do a guarantee. And, you know, if you're going to book World Inferno, you got to do a guarantee. You know what I mean? And so maybe that plan, like, is worth changing in the future. I mean, if we got a headline, well, if you have a band come down from New York, you got to give them a guarantee. Well, maybe, I don't know. I'm bad at booking bands, because anytime I reach out to a band that I don't know, like, it never works out. I'm always like, do you want to come play this show? And they're like, yes. Or they're like, well, and the other thing is, like, I'm just spitballing here, is like, I'll try to book a show. Maybe they got a booking agent. So you say, hey, does this band want to come play? And they're like, well, how much can you offer? And I'm like, can you just tell me the price? Because I've never had this work out ever where the booking agent says, how much can you offer? And so you think to yourself, well, I got a lowball because they're going to try to increase it, you know, or I can try to just I tried to book a band. I probably shouldn't name them, but a very cool band. And they said, well, how much can you offer? And that band had played Philadelphia 8 months prior. So I said, I can offer, I think it was like $1,500, because I said, they played this venue last time and almost sold out. And the number of people at that venue times a $10 ticket is $1,200. So my offer is $300 on top of that, $1,500. Can they come play? And the answer was, they're not willing to do it for that much. And I'm like, well, are you going to give me a counter offer? Like the challenge that I have, aside from booking small bands where we could do a door deal, is that like I've used up all my good connections. And so now I'm dealing with booking agents, which I understand that it's their job to represent the band's best interest, but they don't. I approach the booking agent like I would an attorney. You know, here's what I can offer. Do you have a counter offer? But it never seems to work out that way. How do you have any advice with regards to that? Like I have a lot of problems with booking agents.
No, I mean, I never worked with one, so I don't know much about it.
And I wish, like, the cool thing about World Inferno's booking agent is, I said, does World Inferno want to play? And they were like, yes, they need XYZ dollars. I'm like, all right. But like, so many booking agents are like, well, what's your offer? It's like, well, I don't want to overbid myself, but I don't want to bid too low. It's like, why are we playing? Can you just give me the price? You know, it's, you know, I mean, like, I guess they're hoping that I'm actually, I guess because it's a punk new show, maybe they think I'm backed by some entity. So I'm going to be like $10,000.
You know?
So. Yeah.
So. We don't have no money. No. We never do.
But Hallie is right in that it is a bad idea to book shows and keep losing money, because that's how you get burned out and, like, unhappy about it. And so I agree. I shouldn't lose money throwing shows. But then, I mean, I got to figure out how to make that work. You know, this show was cool. Well, I'm not going to say how much I made. I didn't make a crazy amount of money, but I made enough to really make me happy afterwards, because I thought I was going to lose money, you know. So yeah. So anyway, so – you know, maybe we'll have a Summer Soiree 6 or something before then. I don't know. It doesn't have to be. I've wanted to do a West Coast show for a while, but it'd be weird to do a soiree outside of Philadelphia, because then it wouldn't, like, people are like, six, where's 1 through 5? You know, so. Like, I want to do a West Coast show called the West Coast Assault, but I don't know if people would dig that name or not. Like, but that name might bump some people out, you know.
I wouldn't use the word assault.
That's what makes it funny. Like, assault as in, like, D-Day, you know. But sadly, that word has other connotations now. Or not sad. That's not the right word. But that word does have other connotations now. And I don't want to connote those things, you know.
Yeah.
You could call it a strike.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea, actually. That's a pretty good idea. Good work, Sam. I mean, good work, Sam. The other thing, and then let's see. I guess we're running kind of late here. So one last thing is, my favorite thing to do is kind of do, like, these weird one-off shows. Like, when we had Sturgeon backed by Crazy in the Brains, we did that twice. Like, both of those shows were so amazing and so unique. but I'm not sure if fans want that. Like I think they like to me that's like the coolest thing ever. It's like, wow, like a once time weird show, you know? It's like I was there. But I think fans just want like their favorite band doing what their favorite band does. Am I wrong there?
Well, I guess it depends on the crowd of people living in Philadelphia, right? Like, you know, what does Philadelphians want? Do they want more sturgeon or do they want, like, well, Turnstile?
I don't mean sturgeon per se, but I mean, do people want to see Turnstile or do they want to see Turnstile meshed together with Angel Dust doing an all Cro-Mag set or something, you see?
Well, like, I do like one-off shows. I do love, like, you know, very special things like album shows. So, like, if something like that did happen at, you know, a punk news event, then I think that would be, like, you know, a highlight to, you know, the event. But I do really, really enjoy, like, anniversary shows. And, I'm sure there's tons of bands with anniversaries this year that, or next year that you could possibly tap into.
Mm. True, true, true. Well, that's Summer Soiree 5 and that's Summer Soiree 6 to look forward to. Maybe, probably. We'll see. So, yeah.
I'm so glad you have some wind in your sails because I was like so bummed when you were saying this was maybe one of the, like the last show you were going to throw. And I felt like you were maybe going to rethink that, but I'm glad this put some wind in your sails. I would like to see you do more shows.
Well, thank you. It was so fun to have a sold out show. I mean, you guys all know, like Summer Soiree 1 sold out like 2 months in advance. And at the time I wasn't able to enjoy it cause I'd never thrown a show before, but like knowing that like it's going to be a packed, not even sold out, but like packed house going into it, it's such a good feeling. You know, it's like I got nothing to worry about. All we got to do is have a fun time, you know, so.
Well, John, we're also dealing with like COVID or post-COVID. I don't even know what to call it right now because, you know, I do feel like there's people out there that will not buy tickets in advance to things.
Yeah, true.
You know, not knowing what's going to happen in like 3 months or whatever. So it seems like the pattern that happens with you guys, like, you know, like it's selling out the day of, it is possibly what has been happening. Like, you know, because I personally don't like buying tickets and then being like, now I can't go because, you know, I don't feel well or, you know, this happened or that happened, you know, because especially now in New York, ticket prices are too much money.
That this show is basically like flatline ticket sales until 2 weeks before. And then it just shot way up. And so, yeah. So anyways, thanks for coming out, everybody. And I'm going to try to – I wanted to get an article up on Punk News sooner, but I just been so busy. At any rate, do you guys want to wrap it on up or do you guys want to keep rapping? What do you guys want to do?
It's pretty late. That was good. I think we're
good. All right. I'll play some music by each of the band. Well, At Night doesn't have any band, but I'll play some music by all the bands except At Night, and we will see you next week. Will it be episode 600? Who knows?
Friday night, cooking show with a horse meat dish. I had to stay in the freezer all Thursday Eve. Talking to that horse, I really had to go. Down to the sidewalk, the sky's all red. And the streets fill with people from a high school band. I escaped to a theater to see a girl with long blonde hair, right down to there. I escaped to a theater to see a girl with long blonde hair. We had to leave, got into a tan van, us two in the back with Steve McGarrett from EY50. steering wheel. Speeding away, we slide into a parking lot. Then all in slow motion, these tough guys appear. We argue and fight, and one pulls an ivy. It's me in the back, but I'm all right. I'm all right. I'm all right. I'm all right. I escape to a theater.
It's